When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome one, welcome all to Trashy Royals, where we assemble each week to reveal and revel in the tales of our betters behaving ever so badly. It's Alicia here.
Hi friends, I'm Stacy, and thank you for joining us as we travel to Romania this week for today's Naughty Nobles. This week, really dropping on Thursday. Last week, Mercury retrograde got the best of both of us. Sorry about the Tuesday confusion.
I'm blaming that on the planets and the stars. That wasn't on us. We double-checked that.
We both checked the scheduling. Anyway, it happened.
Who are you bringing us in our trashy journey this week, Stacey?
No less than Romania's very first queen, Elizabeth of Vite, also known as Carmen Silva. This is her poet name. A lot going on in this story. A German princess to queen and an artist to...
Seriously, so much going on with Elizabeth of Vite.
Yup.
Before we begin today's story, let's go ahead and take a moment to give some thanks to our most recent Patreon supporters. Holy cats, y'all are amazing.
Thanks so much for joining us, Jamie S. Look, it's Grandma, Elizabeth of Alabama.
I love it.
Cat Tracks, Chantel M. and Megan M.
Thank you so, so much to our newest supporters, to our sustaining supporters. If you are looking for a way to show your love to Trashy Royals, $2 a month is an easy peasy way to represent. And in return, you get early and ad-free episodes as soon as we drop them.
Hopefully on the right day.
Let's cross your fingers. Stacy, I see no time to delay.
Let us make haste and anon to Elizabeth of Vite, first queen of Romania.
I am excited. I love a trip to Romania. We're going to go there and talk about Romania's first queen.
First queen, Bucharest. Elizabeth of Vite, I think that is the correct pronunciation. And our dear German listeners, who I know we have them because I've looked at the analytics, please bear with me. Going to do my best here. Elizabeth of Vite was a German princess who would become the first queen of Romania.
Kind of a big deal.
And I mean, I think we would just assume that royals of Romania go back forever. They do not. Elizabeth is a historical figure that we hear almost nothing about, but she was eccentric, artistic, temperamental, and frequently unpredictable. She was a nightmare mother-in-law. And these characteristics would sometimes get her into trouble. For instance, her husband once sent her into exile following a romantic and constitutional scandal regarding their nephew and the succession of the Romanian throne.
This sounds right up our Trashy Royals alley.
Mm-hmm. There was much more to Elizabeth of Vite. She was a prolific writer and was even considered a literary genius for the works that she published under her pseudonym of Carmen Silva.
Huh.
She was so well known for her writing that her name, Queen Elizabeth of Romania, and her nom de plume are used interchangeably.
Really?
In history books.
Fascinating.
So let's get into her upbringing. Princess Pauline Elizabeth Ottilie Louise of Vite was born on December 29th, 1843, at Monrepos Castle in Neuwied, Germany. Hoping I got most of that more or less correct.
She's going to be a strong-willed Capricorn lady. No wonder. Mm. Okay, now I get it.
She was named after her godmothers, Queen Elizabeth Ludovica of Prussia and Grand Duchess Elizabeth Mikhailovna of Russia. She had two younger brothers, William and Otto.
Well, at least those are easy to say.
probably William and I missed, whatever. Elizabeth started writing poetry at the age of 9 and attempted her first novel at the age of 12.
Well, that's early.
Her writing would become her lifelong passion and what she is most recognized for. It would also lead her to use the name Carmen Sylva, for which she is much better known than Queen of Romania. First Queen of Romania, you would think it would rank higher, but there you go.
Not if your writing career is more important.
Of her passion for writing poetry, she said, quote, "I could not be gentle and was so passionately impulsive that I was heartily thankful to those who were patient with me. It became better, however, when a safety valve opened for me. That was writing poetry."
Aww.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, her brother Otto was born with a bladder disorder and would be fairly sickly until his death at the age of 11. Mm. This obviously affected Elizabeth's family life to a great degree. When her mother was not herself ill, which was often the case, Mom's attention was almost entirely given to Otto, as you would expect. In 1861, her father also became extremely ill, and Elizabeth spent a lot of time reading to him because he was unable to do anything else. That year was important because it was the year she would first meet her future husband when they were both in Berlin. Princess Elizabeth of Witt and Prince Karl of Hohenzollern-Sigmaringen, boy, I hope I got that right, had a perfect example of what we now call a meet-cute. They met when Prince Karl broke Elizabeth's fall when Elizabeth slipped on some stairs.
Oh, how nice. I mean, for, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of a meet-cute.
Meet-cute. When her father heard of this incident, he wrote to Elizabeth, "You are a recruit in aristocratic ranks, and not the slightest failing must be detected in you. At court, you must learn the balancing step so you may not lose your balance and fall downstairs or morally stumble and upset."
I wonder where he got that idea. You did the meet cute because you fell off a ladder, right? Like, do you think she's as clumsy?
Maybe. But he continues, "In youth, all this is learnt in play, whereas it is a martyrdom to elderly people. But where one is gifted, as you are, with an endless source of internal happiness, all disagreeable which one experiences are but as a fleeting shadow over the sunshine of life."
Well, that's kind of a nice sentiment.
"Since you went away, joy has departed from this house. The gay little bird has flown and is now fluttering from flower to flower. Sometimes it pricks itself with their thorns, but it flies on, careless of what is behind it. Still, it avoids the thorns in future. Now, goodbye. May God bless you, you dear little runaway."
I see where Elizabeth gets it from. Her dad's kind of prosaic.
This is also an extremely loving relationship, clearly.
Yeah.
You know? In 1863, Elizabeth visited Russia. But when she was there, she also got very sick. This was diagnosed as nervous gastric fever.
Okay.
Members of the imperial family took care of her. Obviously, she's a relative of theirs, so they took care of her during her illness, but she ended up staying longer than expected. She did, of course, recover, but because the visit was extended, she was not home when her father died in March of 1864.
Oh.
This was devastating to her. She wrote to her mother upon hearing of her father's death, "As a tree that has been felled leaves a light space in the forest, so a light remains after the death of a great man."
Well, you didn't tell me I needed to bring Kleenex to this. This is beautiful.
This is all the Kleenex part.
That's okay.
It. No more Kleenex.
Okay, good.
She spent the next few years traveling with family and friends, as well as attending to the social obligations that are required for aristocrats. She went with her aunt, Princess Teresa, to France and Italy. She and her mother visited relatives in Sweden. Elizabeth's Aunt Sophia was married to the future King Oscar II of Sweden. In 1869, her brother William became engaged to Princess Marie of the Netherlands. For her part, Elizabeth announced that she did not plan to get married. She was going to study and become a teacher.
Perfect.
You can imagine that Elizabeth's mother did not like this plan. And that was when Prince Karl of Hohenzollern-Sigmaringen came back into Elizabeth's story. Elizabeth and her mother were spending a few weeks in Bonn. No doubt, alerted through Elizabeth's mother, Prince Carl came calling on the young princess.
I hear there's a princess on a ladder around here.
Before Elizabeth even knew Carl was there, he had already asked her mother for her hand in marriage. Elizabeth was informed of the engagement, and apparently once she kind of got over the shock of the news, she was quite happy about it. She's reported to have said, "I am betrothed and a blissfully happy bride."
Well, that's nice. I bet that marriage goes great.
They married on November 15th, 1869 in Neuwied and left for Romania just 3 days later. All right, so let's talk about how Prince Carl becomes a future king of Romania, because it is not
a straight line.
It's not a straight line. Partly because there wasn't like a unified Romania up to this point, I think. But Prince Carl came to be the future king of Romania in an unusual way. Prince Carl Eitel Frederick Zephyrinus, it's a great name, of Hohenzollern-Sigmaringen, was born on April 20, 1839. His parents were Prince Carl Anton of Hohenzollern-Sigmaringen and Princess Josephine of Baden. As a German prince, he was educated in Dresden and Bonn before becoming an officer in the Prussian army. Romania had gone through significant changes leading to unification, but the ruler at the time made the wealthy citizens angry with a number of reforms that were better for the non-wealthy people of Romania and eventually ousted him, leaving Romania in need of, come on, if you're a royal at the time, you need it to be a new king, not any of this democracy garbage. So Alexandru Ion Cuza was the domnitor, the ruler of the Romanian principalities.
Domnitor, okay.
He had been elected king of Wallachia. This is a region of modern Romania, as well as the king of Moldavia. This is a historical territory that now encompasses the Republic of Moldova, parts of Ukraine, and part of Romania at the same time. So he was leader of both of these territories.
Lots of jobs.
So he decided that the two lands should be unified. And since other European countries, this is great powers fighting the Crimean War, is wrapping up, the Ottoman Empire is in retreat. So the great powers accepted Romania as one country, which made it official. He had done some very positive things for the country in addition to unification. He introduced agrarian reform. He eradicated serfdom, which Russia was also doing kind of in this time period as well. He also made a law about education and established tuition-free compulsory public education for all Romanian children.
Wow.
There were many other changes. He founded the Romanian Naval Forces and the University of Bucharest. As you can imagine, the wealthy landowners and conservatives in Romania did not love the changes that took away their control of all the land and all the indentured servants. Not only were they able to use these political decisions against him, but he had also created a bit of a scandal in his personal life.
Uh-oh.
Cuza was married, but had a long-term mistress named Maria Katarzyu Obrenović. After his wife...
Gosh, should I get you some, like, marbles to put in your mouth? You're doing great. There's a lot in this story.
Marbles would not hurt. After his wife was unable to have a child, he began openly having many affairs. His wife ended up going to Paris in 1853 and stayed there until 1862. She only returned because her husband's people were like, hey...
You've been gone a decade?
Well, you being gone is really, it makes him look bad, and he's got the mistress, and like, come back. So she returns. She adopted the two children that Cuza had had with his mistress, Maria.
Oh, my.
But the tide of public opinion had turned against Cuza, and a group of discontented landowners and noblemen formed a coup d'etat.
Story as old as time.
On February 11th, 1866, the conspirators broke into the palace, forced him to sign his abdication. We've heard of this before. He was forced into exile, where he took both the wife and mistress.
You're kidding. Wow.
No. Why wouldn't you?
That's a big carriage.
Sure. After Cuza's forced abdication, Prince Carl was not the first choice to replace him. I think the choice of the great powers, again... Romania's political leaders originally wanted Philip of Flanders, the brother of King Leopold II of Belgium. When Philip decided maybe King of Romania was not, like, the hottest thing he could do with his life, Napoleon III in France suggested Prince Karl.
Interesting.
Once in Romania, Prince Karl became known as the more Romanized version, Carol I, when he was elected king, so weird, on April 20, 1866. His coronation would happen in May. By June of 1866, the Romanian parliament adopted the Constitution of Romania, which was modeled after Belgium's constitution. This is pretty progressive for its era. It guaranteed the Romanian people private property, freedom of speech, freedom of the press. It abolished the death penalty during peacetime. It created a separation of powers of the government. Constitutional monarchy, right?
It's great, good stuff, good stuff.
It also declared that King Carol's male descendants would be heirs to the Romanian throne and that they must be raised as Eastern Orthodox Christians. So that's all, like, cool and progressive and liberal and forward-thinking and Western and all of that. However, this constitution also banned non-Christians from becoming Romanian citizens at all.
Oh.
And this region of Europe had long been, like, a hotspot in particular for Ashkenazi Jews to emigrate to for safety. Obviously, bad news if you are a Jewish Romanian person. Strangely, although it elected its own king and adopted a constitution, it was not until May of 1877, so 11 years later.
That's a long time, yeah.
When the Romanian parliament would declare itself independent from Turkish rule. There was a brief war of independence, which Romania won, and the Treaty of Berlin, which is the official document making Romania independent, was signed on July 13th, 1878. This kind of marks the end of Ottoman control
okay.
over the area. I feel like they had, probably to stave off war, had just opted to, like, sure, in theory, we're a province of the Ottoman Empire, but then Alexander II and Russia went to war with the Ottoman Empire to kind of finally push them out of Europe. And here we are. So this is a great spot to pause, hear from some sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
See you on the flip.
I'm Dr. Megan Sachs.
And I'm Dr. Amy Sloshberg.
And we're the host of the podcast Campus Killings. Our show covers some of the most sinister crimes to take place on or around school campuses, or the cases we discuss have a school-connected theme.
And with the new school year comes an all-new second season of Campus Killings, which will debut on September 16th, 2023.
But if you want to listen to Campus Killings now, you can binge all the episodes from season one, available everywhere you listen to podcasts.
All right, now we got a Romania. What happens next? Bring Elizabeth back in this story.
Once in Romania, Elizabeth devoted herself to her new country and quickly became fluent in the language. She gave birth to a daughter they named Marie on September 8, 1870. Sadly, Marie came down with scarlet fever and diphtheria when she was 4 years old and died.
Aww.
In addition to the emotional anguish that this caused, Elizabeth's physical health began to suffer as well from her grief. Carol, her husband, was advised by doctors to take her to
the seaside?
Franzenbad for a water cure. It was there that she met a poet that she bonded with over their mutual love of words and literature and poetry. This poet would send her his poems and she would translate them into Romanian. While doing this, Elizabeth realized that keeping her mind occupied helped distract her from her grief over her lost child. She never stopped being devoted to writing and interacting with other artists. Her primary focus as Queen of Romania was on children's education and charitable works. But as she and Carol spent less time together, their marriage began to show some real strains. The lack of connection with her husband caused her to spend even more time writing poetry, plays, and short stories, adopting the pseudonym of Carmen Silva. She would later write, quote, "To publish my own writings would never have entered into my head had they not passed from another and been copied endlessly. So I came to the conclusion at last that if they are worth such tedious work as copying, they are worthy of being printed. Whether my writings are praised or criticized in the world is of as little moment to me as if it did not concern myself. But when I read my poems to others, I am pleased if they produced the impression I desire. This is also a very safe criterion as to their truth and clearness. I should be delighted if my poems were sung without anyone knowing whose composition they are. But the royal couple is stuck in this ugly place where there is no heir. And so King Carol gets to work.
Oh no.
He ends up adopting his nephew, Prince Ferdinand of Hohenzollern-Sigmaringen, who would become his heir. Prince Ferdinand was the second son of Prince Leopold of Hohenzollern. This is King Carol's older brother, and the Infanta Antonia of Portugal. Both Ferdinand's father and older brother renounced any right of succession to the royal crown of Romania, so it's in keeping with the constitution they've just signed, which cleared the way for him. In 1886, Ferdinand hopped out of Hohenzollern, got to Romania, and was declared crown prince of the Kingdom of Romania. When he arrived, he did not know the culture, he did not know the language. His uncle, Carol I, was an austere and self-centered man who showed little affection for him. Being educated and reared to become the next king also kept Prince Ferdinand isolated from his peers. And it was through his loneliness that Ferdinand became close to a young woman at the Romanian court that would cause scandal for young Ferdinand and for his aunt, Queen Elizabeth.
Oh, goody. This is what I'm here for.
This is the Vacărescu affair. In 1888, a young woman named Elena Vacărescu caught the attention and interest of Queen Elizabeth of Romania. Vacărescu had written a book which impressed the fellow writer queen, so she invited Elena to Bucharest. Come hang out at the court. Loved your book.
We'll be artists together.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah, let's talk about words and stuff.
So these two like-minded women became friends, and soon their bond intensified even further. The queen began to think of Elena as a daughter. Again, that constitution had a lot of rules in place. Anyway, considering that Queen Elizabeth's only daughter had died at a young age, it's not far-fetched to think that, yes, this younger writer, peer, whatever, could sort of fill in that gap for Queen Elizabeth. Because of her affection for Elena, the queen encouraged her nephew, Crown Prince Ferdinand, to begin a romance with her.
Oh, of course.
This was a bad idea on a lot of levels, but mostly because Elizabeth herself knew that a marriage between Ferdinand and Elena was forbidden in the Romanian constitution. Queen Elizabeth's efforts were successful, and Crown Prince Ferdinand fell in love with Elena.
Oh, no.
And again, Ferdy doesn't really know
how
things work
rules.
In Romania.
Yeah.
Doesn't speak the language. Well, I mean, I'm sure he's learning the language. Naive to the ways of the court and the expectations of his position, Crown Prince Ferdinand declared his intention to marry Elena.
Oh, my.
King Carol made it clear to all involved that a marriage between the future king and Queen Elizabeth's commoner friend was completely out of the question. This was a scandal throughout the country. But putting an end to the idea of this marriage was not enough for King Carol. He was enraged, and when he realized that it was his wife at the center of this plot to get these two together, he sent Elizabeth into exile.
Oh.
She was banished to her homeland of Neuwied for 2 full years, and Elena was dispatched to Paris indefinitely. I don't know if that's really the crushing blow you might think, but anyway.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Don't send me
not
to Paris.
Yikes.
How will I ever survive in the land of croissant?
A lady writer
art.
In Paris. This is terrible.
Eclairs. Give me the butter and the cheese.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
Obviously, this scandal.
Yeah, when I'm exiled, please send me to Paris. That's great.
No, Your Majesty, not Paris.
Anywhere but there.
So this scandal did not help Elizabeth's reputation and standing with the Romanian people, who already had begun to see her as maybe a little too eccentric, a little too unconventional to be a proper queen. And by the time that Elizabeth was allowed to return to Romania a few years later, Crown Prince Ferdinand had already married a suitable wife who was actually quite popular with the Romanian people because she was not Lily Tomlin floating around the castle shouting poems out the balustrades, apparently. Who was that wife, Alicia?
I don't know. Who?
I'm so glad you asked. Okay, so after the Elena Vacărescu fiasco, Ferdinand was sent off on a wife-hunting trip throughout Europe.
Oh, goody.
Like you do. And he hit the jackpot when Princess Missy, Princess Marie of Edinburgh...
No!
Mm-hmm, was convinced to marry him under slightly false pretenses.
We've heard about Missy of Edinburgh before.
Yes.
She's a granddaughter of Queen Victoria.
Yes.
Daughter of Alfred.
Mm-hmm.
That's her dad. And we know about Missy because her sister is Ducky.
Oh, right,
who
right.
Who married Ernie. Ernst and Princess Victoria Melita. We talked about them back in episode 31 and 32. Okay. Missy, fold her in to the trashy royals eclair.
Sure. So, yes, to reiterate, Missy was the beautiful and clever granddaughter of Queen Victoria, who had recently turned down a marriage proposal from her cousin, Prince George of Wales.
Oh, yeah.
Who would later become King George V. But another story, another time. Although a lot of details of the Elena scandal were kept private and not told to Marie, the future queen of Romania, she would learn enough of the scandal to include some of it in her memoir.
Oh, good.
Which she titled The Story of My Life by Marie, Queen of Romania.
Clear cut, easy to understand.
She writes, and this is fascinating to me. So, quote, Carmen Sylva knew that King Carol would admit of no marriage for his nephew with one not of his caste. Besides, the Romanians wished their royal family to be exclusive. They were not to mix with those of the land. The dynasty was to stand apart, aloof, out of the reach of commoners. They were to seek their wives or husbands beyond the frontiers amongst those of their own rank. This is so, like, let's perpetuate elitism forever.
Well, I mean, Missy of Edinburgh knows the deal. She's not getting recruited because of anything besides her pedigree,
yes.
Right?
So she continues, this had been specially stipulated when King Carol accepted the throne. But although Carmen Sylva knew this, her poetical temperament could not resist this romantic development. Besides, had not Ferdinand just selected her, Elena, as favorite? Elena was a remarkable girl, and her intelligence was far above that of the average royal princess.
I like it that she doesn't say above me.
Right.
But just to be average. Like the average princess.
You just take the average, of which I am high above. Anyway, she continues, Elena was dark-eyed, hot-blooded, impulsive. She would be a glorious mate for the pale, unassuming prince. She would lead and inspire him, fill him with life, spirit, ambition. They would have healthy children. God would smile upon them. Thus, in her heart of hearts, argued the poet queen. That is quite a view from the woman who ended up being the wife of Ferdinand.
That is something.
Mm-hmm.
So is Elizabeth of Veete going to love her new daughter-in-law?
It gets tricky. So uh-oh. Queen Elizabeth / Carmen Sylva, her disposition was very different from that encouraged in the Romanian culture. She was interested in spiritualism and even practiced levitation.
Perfect.
I don't know how successful... No measure of how high she was able to levitate. I'm sure it was a lot.
Dude, I am picturing Lily Tomlin.
She's into faith healing.
Walking around
absolutely.
The castle, just kind of, you know, mm-hmm. loosey-goosey, having a good time, letting the world go where it takes her into all the things that are maybe a little ethereal
just,
in the world.
Just, yeah. So according to Prince Michael of Greece, she would, quote, wander in flowing white robes and veils and played the violin to the fir trees. And, quote, loved to shout her poems from the terrace above the shore of the Black Sea toward the ships in front of her palace, a spectacle which left the marines rather dumbfounded.
Wow. This is a visual.
Marie of Romania also included the following description of Queen Elizabeth / Carmen Sylva in her memoir. Quote, Carmen Sylva was indeed a compelling personality. At an early age, her hair had turned gray, almost white. Her intensely blue eyes had a penetrating look. She laughed often, for her teeth were white and magnificent, but her laugh was in striking contrast with the tragedy of her eyes. Without ever having been considered a beauty, there was a rare fascination about her, and it was almost impossible not to fall under her spell. Anyhow, at first... To the young, she was a sort of legend come down upon earth. Her voice was extraordinarily melodious, and when she set out to charm, she seldom failed. She did not inspire passion, but admiration.
Wow.
And that something tragic about her made all men feel they would like to lighten the burden she was carrying, even when they did not quite understand what that burden was. Character is destiny. Carmen Sylva's character drove her towards tragedy. She saw all things as tragedies and therefore dramatized even the simplest events of everyday life. No two human beings could have been greater contrasts than Carmen Sylva, the inspired poetess, and King Carol, her lord and master, that forbidding man with an iron sense of duty and no sense of humor, for whom existed neither caprice nor relaxation in any form.
Well, Missy of Edinburgh can sure write.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Humorously, in a letter that she wrote in 1934, Queen Marie, Missy, of Romania said in part, quote, "As I say in my book, I love her memory more than I loved her when she was alive. She was too fatiguing." This is such a great way of saying she was exhausting. She was too fatiguing.
I love her memory more.
There was no repose about her and none of the serenity of old age. She just got weirder and weirder.
I love Elizabeth of Veit.
I am also kind of loving Elizabeth of Veit. It gets a little uglier as we go forward, but before we get there, we should probably take a break.
Oh, before we do the big finale, the big denouement. Excellent. We'll be right back with the conclusion of Elizabeth of Veit. Okay, what happens now?
Well, babies happen now.
Oh.
So once the new Crown Princess Marie gave birth at the young age of 18 to Prince Carol, the future King Carol II, Carmen Sylva saw it as her second chance at motherhood, which is totally what When Marie gave birth 1 year later to a daughter, Carmen Sylva decided it was also her right to raise that child as well. So Marie was basically bullied into handing her children over what is in effect her mother-in-law. This would cause a lifelong troubled relationship between Marie and her two eldest children.
Oh, I bet.
Even though she desired to take Marie's oldest children and raise them herself, Elizabeth was also very jealous of Marie for giving birth at all, especially when the eldest child was a boy. So Elizabeth was still in exile in Germany when she learned of Marie's pregnancy. In the book Americans and Queen Marie of Romania, editor Diana Mendash includes a document where Queen Marie reflects on that experience. Quote, "I came at once to Bucharest," this again is Queen Marie, "I came at once to Bucharest, and in 9 months I made a present to the country of a young heir to the throne. Speedy work, was it not? Between January 10, 1893 and October 15th, Carmen Sylva had written me from Germany before the baby arrived. I hope it will be a girl." What do you think of that for a nasty remark? She was furiously angry when she learned that it was a boy, the heir to the throne.
This is messy.
There's some mommy-daughter dynamics here.
Yeah.
Anyway, once the children were born, Queen Elizabeth / Carmen Sylva went from being a loving presence and influence on Marie to being a competitive and plotting one. In biographies of King Carol II, this is, of course, Marie's eldest son, he is always described as having been raised by his great-aunt and uncle, King Carol I and Queen Elizabeth. The reason is always a version of the king and queen feeling that Carol's parents were unable to raise him in a, quote, proper way, for a variety of reasons, including just that they were young. Here, young prince and princess, you are just not up to the task of raising your own children.
Wow.
One such account described it this way. Quote, "The result was a virtual tug of war between Carol's parents and the king and queen, which left him, Carol, according to one historian, quote, man, this is terrible, both spoiled and deprived of love."
Oh, isn't that sad?
Yeah. Another account said that the king and queen, quote, "took custody of Missy's young children, insisting that they were able to provide them with the stability and education they would need later in life. Missy fought back, but she had little leverage and few friends positioned to help. The Queen's, Carmen Sylva, worst tactic was spreading gossip and innuendo to the children themselves, particularly Prince Carol. In the same book recounting Queen Marie's visit to America, the author includes comments that Queen Marie made about her predecessor.
Oh, no.
Quote, Carmen Sylva was always strongly under the influence of her immediate surroundings. She was emotional and intense after the German style. She had many old dames among her ladies-in-waiting who often led her around by the nose. She would become emotionally intense over the needs of some new charity and would select a leader for it, often quite unfit, and unwisely chosen whom she would keep with her morning, afternoon, and night, to the exclusion of all others, and for the time being no other person would seem to the Queen of any use. Hence she stirred up jealousies in the court, and there was considerable trouble. So it seems like someone who would become very enraptured by an idea for a shortish period of time. You know, like, I think everybody kind of has that friend who's super focused on a thing and then like, then it just kind of wanes. But this is, of course, a friend who is a queen of a country, so a little different. Interestingly, the future King Carol II will have to be covered on a future episode because he ended up being very trashy. By the time he was 19, he'd already fathered two illegitimate children.
Oh my God.
Then he married the daughter of a Romanian general, which again had to be annulled because it was never sanctioned by the church or the king or the pesky constitution. Even after the annulment, though, they lived together and had another son.
Sure, why not?
But then Carol left and married his cousin, Princess Helen of Greece. He would, of course, have many affairs during that marriage and would end up divorcing his wife in order to marry his mistress, which, again, not allowed under Romanian law, so he renounced his rights to the throne. But then a few years later, he participated in a coup with the prime minister to return to the throne. There's a lot there. Needless to say, as the story is about Elizabeth, the first queen of Romania, died on March 2nd, 1916, from pneumonia. She was 72.
Wow.
And again, continues to be known in history books at least as much for her contributions to art and literature as she is for being the first queen of Romania.
That is fascinating. I had no idea.
Yeah, and the mother-daughter dynamics there are like so contemporary, right? I mean, this is a very relatable situation for a lot of people who suddenly find that that sweet mother-in-law has a lot of opinions about child rearing and such.
You painted quite a picture there, Stacey. Well done.
Well, thank you.
I will not forget about Elizabeth of Veete anytime soon.
No, the Lily Tomlin of the of Bucharest.
You guys, let's just go ahead and levitate a little while. It'll be fine. It'll be fun. Thank you, one and all, for tuning in today. We really appreciate you listening and telling your friends about what we do in our universe of trashy.
We'll see you next week back here. And Trashy Divorces, the other podcast we do together, is totally back from a break in between seasons.
Huzzah! Trashy Divorces, back in business. That one comes for you Sundays and Wednesdays. If you like Trashy Royals and you're not checking out Trashy Divorces yet, you may want to.
Big love to you all. Until we meet again next week, keep your eye on the throne, friends.
Polish up that crown. Big love, everybody. Have a great week.
Bye.
Bye.